Can we manoeuvre this? No, that's fine. Good. Excellent. Well, it's great to be in the north today. It's always a little bit of a bittersweet experience coming up here. I mean, because I come from the north. I became a Christian in the north. We're living in places like Turnpike Lane and Tottenham and Seven Sisters and their areas for my spiritual youth. And it's great just to see you guys. There's people I've known here for years, like Andy was instrumental in me becoming a Christian. When I first came along the church, he reached out to me and he gave me a tour of London in my little MG, and the exhaust kept falling off at that time. And he was very patient, and every time the exhaust fell off, we'd prop the car up, we'd get underneath, and we'd bang it back on again, and off we go. And it's two examples of relationships like that I became a Christian. Yeah, because I thought these guys are real and they live their faith. So it's great for me to come back to the north. I say slightly, but because every time I come here, I have a disaster or a minor one. The first time I came to preach to you, I opened my folder when I got up to preach and realized I left my notes and the printer at home. And the second time I got excited and I knocked my water all over the audio visual equipment, and luckily haven't given me today. And today, I made sure I left in plenty of time because of the weather. I mean, coming around the M25 was quite exciting with a spray, and there'd been some accidents and stuff. But I'd left in plenty of time. I came off the North Circular, and I'm on autopilot by then. So I come off the North Circular, and I expect to arrive here at any moment. And my children, I've got with me my two youngest today, Jonathan and Juliet, were in the back of the car, and to amuse themselves, they decided to read the Bible backwards. And they started off by reading every word in the beginning of the Bible, and they read the word backwards. They tried to pronounce the words backwards, which was like listening to somebody trying to speak in tongues. It was really distracting. And when they got bored of that, then they started reading from the back of the Bible, read the words forward, but from the back. And I was listening to all this and getting very, very confused and wondering what on earth I was listening to and trying to work out what passages they were actually reading. And before I knew it, I'm in Muswell Hill. So then, I thought, okay, I'll just turn around. So I went around Muswell Hill, and I must have taken the wrong exit. And then I'm in Fortis Green. And then I'm regretting that I didn't bring my A to Z with me. But by the power of God, I managed to backtrack and find my way here. So it's great to be with you this morning. Now, do you have a theme for the year in the North London Church? And what's your theme? Excellent, I like that. It's good that everybody knows the theme. I like themes. In the Surrey Church, I wanted to have a theme this year. Every year we have a theme. And this year, unfortunately, we don't really have a theme. Mainly because when I try to introduce a theme, I always tend to go, I like something that rhymes. And with 2010, you've got so many options, like, you know, Boys to Men in 2010. You know, Being Supermen in 2010. Or Just Do It Then in 2010. I think everybody got so irritated that we decided not to have a theme. But whatever our big needs we feel, and certainly is a theme in anything but spoken word, is our need to reach out. And in Surrey, we've had three baptisms in the last year or so, which has been fantastic, especially as they are all teens. There are any teens here today? Wow. Yeah, quiet at the back there. We had my daughter Lauren was baptized just over a year ago, and then Rachel Fowle was baptized last year, and then just last Sunday, Sarah Fowle was baptized on Valentine's Day. So we've had three awesome girl teens, and that's great. That's fantastic. We just need a few boy teens, don't we, Jonathan? Yeah, for my son Jonathan. No pressure. He's still in the Bible at the moment, but lots of girls waiting for you there. Don't want to mess up your motivation, okay? But that's been really exciting. I mean, you know, as any father, it's a culmination, you know, when your kids are born and you just look ahead to the time they become Christians. And so it's been fantastic just seeing that happen within the families down in Surrey. And I think that will continue to happen because we have a great preteen group as well. So, you know, I think that's fantastic. But the thing we really lack is bringing people from outside. And we haven't really baptized anybody from sort of outside the church since, well, the last 5 years, really. And I thought about it, and we often joke amongst the parents about our kids marrying each other, you know, who's so-and-so going to marry, and who's such-and-such going to marry, and the women start joking about buying hats, and all this sort of thing. And but then more recently, I just thought, actually, this is funny, but it's not, because we could end up as a little sort of incestuous church where we all sort of marry each other and intermarry, and that would be horrible. And so it's very much more on my heart, probably more than ever, that we need to reach out, we need to be effective. And for me, it's something very revelation, because I'm not, evangelism, I wouldn't classify as one of my gifts. I've always had to really work at it. And I think in the way the church was in the past, because, it was almost sort of hit over our head all the time, and all this accountability and stuff like that I never had to have a heart for it, because it didn't matter whether I had a heart for it, because I had to be somebody pushing me all the time, and the expectation and all that. Now that's taken away, I'm actually developing a real heart for the lost. It's taken me a while, I have to apologize, but it's getting there. And I've had a real concern and a real care, just to build our church as well, and to see the people in our area become Christians. So that was felt like that's our big need for the year. So what is the first thing we start doing? Well, in February, we're doing a church-wide series on prayer, which is fantastic. And initially, I was a little bit reticent. I thought, well, no, we need to focus on reaching out and do things to get out in the community, and now we're just going to talk about prayer. But the more it made me think that actually, it's obvious really, but all these things are so interconnected. And when we think we're talking about faith, it's all linked to our prayer life and how we live our lives and how we reach out. And the more I've actually got into the series we do on prayer, the more I realized my need to reach out and the things that stop me doing it as well. And I'd just like to share one verse before I get into the main theme of the message today. In James, and chapter 1. Now, one of my favorite verses is James chapter 1, verses 2 to 4, but I'm going to skip through that. And it says in verse 5, if any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all who without finding fault, and it will be given to him. But when he asks, he must believe and not doubt, because he who doubts is like a wave of the sea blown and tossed about by the wind. That man should not think he will receive anything from the Lord. He is double-minded man, unstable in all he does. And I read this verse last week, and it was part of our series, and I think I had to teach it, made it ultra challenging. And I just thought how double-minded I am sometimes, and how that affects my prayer. And I don't know if you've ever felt like, I noticed my prayer got quite sporadic, and I was, sometimes it was good, and sometimes it was just bad, and sometimes it was just inconsistent. And then when it was inconsistent, I would go out, and the first thing I've been praying about was apologizing to God for being inconsistent. And so it just had a sort of a dragging effect on my prayer. And he talks here about being double-minded. And if you ever felt that your life doesn't really match up where you need to be, it makes you double-minded, and it affects how faithfully you pray, and how specifically. And that was the thing I felt really challenged by. I thought, well, my prayer has been sort of okay, but it's not been particularly specific and particularly faithful, especially in the area of reaching out. And why not? Because I'm actually not living it. I'm not dealing with the things I should be dealing with. I had a good example recently. As a very late birthday treat for my daughter, as I'm going to have her to do now, is that I decided I'd take her up into the mountains, and she'd never climbed a mountain before. And I did the same thing with Jonathan a couple of years ago. So we've been trying to do this all year, and eventually got to Christmas and said, right, we're going to do it the week before Christmas for 2 days, and we're going to drive up overnight to North Wales on Monday morning, early hours of Monday morning, and we'll climb mountains for 2 days, and it was fantastic. There was snow and ice and everything. And then we'll drive back late at night. So it's going to be great fun. On the Sunday night, I went to start packing the gear, and I went to get something out of the car, and I had to do something, and the car, I couldn't get into the car. I'd locked the car, and the immobilizer stopped working, so I couldn't get back into it. And I got one of these cars. My car is about 13 years old, and so it's not really worth immobilizing or having an alarm on it, but it does, and I can't disable it. And my key fob has stopped working. I couldn't get into the car. This is frustrating. I'm supposed to be driving up to Wales, and I can't even get into my car. I could use the key to get into it, but of course the alarm would go off and wake all the neighbours up, and I couldn't start it. So I spent Sunday evening trying to get into my own car. Now, how frustrating is that? And of course my daughters are waiting, you know, knowing that we're going to leave in the early hours of the morning. And about 10 o'clock at night, I said, well, look, you should go to bed. And I still haven't got it fixed. And I kept coming in, trying different things, looking things up on the internet. And she said, and every time I went out to do the car, she started praying. And I come back in, and she says, is it fixed now? And I said, no, sorry. And then I said, look, why don't you go to bed? And she said, well, I'm praying for the engine to be fixed. And I said, well, it's not the problem with the engine, it's the immobilizer. I can't even get into the car. And she went off to bed. At 11 o'clock that night, I eventually managed to disable the alarm so I could get into my own car and start it. And at that point, I decided, right, we'll pack all the gear now and get ready, and got up at 3:30 in the morning, off we went. And when I was speaking to her, I got up, you know, she said, was it working now? I said, yeah. And she said, well, that's because I was praying for the engine, but the problem wasn't the engine, it was the immobilizer. So when I prayed for the immobilizer, it worked. I thought, what a heart. And I've lost a lot of that. You know, she prayed specifically, and she believed that it would happen. And how specific are we in our prayers? Yeah, how faithful are we in our prayers? You know, our theme is faith. How faithful are our prayers? We really believe in the things we pray about. Are we being double-minded? Are we, you know, blown around by the winds, and the things that happen to us affect how faithfully we pray? And that was a big lesson for me. Now, what the rest of the message I want to do in John chapter 4. It's one of my favorite passages. And let's share, for me, the thing that came out of a lot of the study on prayer I did, I thought, you know, a lot of it is, I'm not very outward focused as a person. My natural sinful nature is I get quite into myself. And I, you know, I'm not unfriendly, but I'm not friendly. You know, I don't go out, you know, outwardly try and reach out to people. And I notice when I'm not praying, that's when I get more like. And I thought, what am I like at work? Actually, I'm not unfriendly to people, but I'm not the one to initiate conversations. I'm not the one to go out and to see how, you know, see somebody looking down and think, oh, well, let me go and cheer them up. I just sort of get on with my work. Somebody speaks to me, I'm friendly. I thought, that's not what Christ is like. And the reason I got like that was because I wasn't being particularly prayerful. You know, so I wasn't being that faithful, and I wasn't being that close to God. So one of the passages I studied out was John 4. And I shall start. It's the story of the Jesus and the Samaritan woman by the well. And we start in verse 4. Now he had to go through Samaria. So he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about the sixth hour. When the Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, will you give me a drink? His disciple had gone into town to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, you are a Jew, a Samaritan woman. You are a Jew, I am a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? For Jews do not associate with Samaritans. So I'd stop right there. I think that the first, and then the point I have written down, is the faith to speak. But the first challenge about this, I love this passage because for me it helps me to relate to Jesus and the way he reached out to people. Because I hear about Jesus, you know, speaking to 5,000 people on the mountain, or, you know, doing a miracle, and lots of people would gather around and he'd start teaching. And I thought, well, I can't really do that. I mean, that's great, and it's inspiring, and it's fantastic, but for me, that doesn't help me to be able to reach out to people. It doesn't help me in my day-to-day life. So what helps me? When I look at this passage, this is the longest recorded conversation one-on-one that Jesus had with anybody. Now, I think it probably wasn't the only long conversation. I think he had lots of these types of conversations. So it sort of gives us insight to the day-to-day sort of life of Jesus and the way he talked to people. And I find that inspiring. And I can look at that and I say, I can do that. I can't do the miracles, at least not like Jesus did. I can't heal anybody. And I don't think I'm going to pull 5,000 people on top of a mountain to preach to them. But I can have day-to-day conversations. And so that's why I love the passage. And the first thing that really challenges me that Jesus did was he opened his mouth and he started speaking to the woman. And I thought, well, okay, would I do that in these circumstances? And you've got to understand, as it says here, that Jews did not speak to Samaritan women. You know, they generally didn't speak to women, generally. You know, a rabbi wouldn't tend to speak to a woman in public, even his wife, apparently. But to speak to a Samaritan woman, it was just unheard of. And it's difficult to imagine that even in our society. I mean, part of the challenge is who do you speak to? You know, it's like there may be certain people you feel more comfortable speaking to than others. You know, Jesus, by speaking to probably about the least likely person he'd speak to, sets a challenge for us. You know, I find it easier speaking to the phrase that came out in the prayer lesson. I don't know whether it's a common one. Is PLUs? Have you heard that? People like you. All right, we all have, you know, peers, the people like us. You know, maybe we have similar type jobs, similar type lives, similar age, racially similar, etc. And that's easier, isn't it? Jesus was not speaking to a PLU here. And I think the other thing that challenges me is that Jesus was friendly. And it's, again, I mean, it's silly, isn't it? But it's an incredibly effective way of reaching out. Alright, this is the golden rule. This being friendly to people. And I said, I found that a challenge. Not that I'm unfriendly, but I don't get out of myself by nature and be friendly to people. And just the fact that he spoke to this woman was friendly, and she was obviously taken back. She didn't expect a Jewish guy to speak to her. She expected to be ignored. And yet he was friendly. How friendly are we in the people we meet on a day-to-day basis? You know, the people on the train. You know, the people at work. The people we don't know. People in the shop. Yeah, you know, are we friendly to the shop assistants? Or are we just a bit grumpy, and especially if they're slow and they don't give us what we want? If somebody on the train gets in your way, I'm a terrible one for wanting to do everything quickly. When people get in my way, I get irritated. That's not how Jesus would be. How friendly are we in our day-to-day conversations? Or are we just thinking of ourselves? I think the other thing about Jesus in this conversation that really strikes me, he was very vulnerable. Even just, you know, expressing a need, can you get me a drink? You know, my nature is that I don't like being vulnerable. You know, I don't like, you know, people see me in need. And that's not how Jesus was. And again, that's a great way to get conversations, is express a need. You know, is to be, you know, to be open and vulnerable. I've noticed, you know, how much, you know, if I'm more vulnerable, that, you know, the people warm to you. My sinful nature is not like that, so I have to really pray about this, and I have to really work on it, and just go out on a limb. For some people, that might be easier than others. I had an incident not so long ago, which sort of helped me to see a lot of these points in action. I often join in with a local charity, the local YMCA, and they do some various challenges every year. And last year they did something called the 24 Peaks, which is sort of 24 mountains in 24 hours in the Lake District, and the mountains are about 2,500 feet or more, and you cover about 35 miles. So it's a fair challenge. And I joined in that, and I managed to drag some of the Christians along. So I had Ralph and Stella Bayliss from Surrey, and also Peter Frost, Andy Frost's brother. And we joined in this challenge, and there was about 30 people in the local area. So I thought, well, you know, the reason that sort of pulled me in, I thought it's a great way to reach out and get to know people, you know, joining this challenge. And unfortunately, we didn't get to know many people beforehand because they did all the training on Sundays, which is a real pain. So we had to do our own training, which wasn't a lot. And then the weekend came, and we got a lift with two other guys. So there was six of us in the car, and there's these two guys at the front. And we were chatting away in the car, and they turned around and said, "How do you guys know each other then?" And I said, "Oh, we go to the same church." And then their interest was immediately up. And they said, "Oh, what sort of church is that?" And we had a great conversation all the way up, in the, all up the Lake District, in the car with these guys. I thought, well, that's the power of having people with you and being friendly. And they could see that we obviously got on well, and we knew each other. And so we had a great time. And then we did the challenge, and we did all the 24 mountains in the rain, in the cloud, and it was quite a challenge, but we did it. And at the end, and then outside, so the Christians were out in front all the way. It wasn't a race, but we did come first. We weren't being competitive much. And in the end, we had a big dinner to celebrate. And I was sitting down at dinner, and we started having a conversation with one of the girls there, and mainly Stella and myself were talking to her, and she was sort of interesting coming to church, but we found out that week she was moving to Southampton, and yeah, so there was complications, but we had a good conversation with her. And then the next day we're heading back down to London, and I'm feeling a bit good about myself. Wow, this is, well, we've had some really good conversations. You know, I really felt like we shared our faith here, and we've been out of ourselves, and this is good. You know, I've got nobody definitely studying the Bible yet, but this is encouraging. So I'm sitting on the minibus, feeling fairly tired, and you know, just chilling out a bit. And I went around and chatted to a few different people, and I was chatting to the guy who runs it, organized what we're going to do next year and whatever challenge. And then Stella was there, and she said, "Well, do you speak to that guy that's sitting next to you?" I said, "No, I hadn't actually." I said, "Well, he overheard our conversation with this girl and came to me afterwards and said, asked me all about baptism, and because he'd been studying it out and he felt like his church wasn't teaching it properly." And I thought, wow, I'd been sitting next to this guy for over an hour. I hadn't said a word to him. And so he was there. I thought, whoa, how silly is that? So immediately, the first thing I did, I would go back and I start having a conversation with him, and we had a great conversation all the rest of the 3-hour journey or whatever it was down to London, and we arranged to meet up and have met up a couple of times. And you never know what might come out of it. But it really taught me just the, you know, you've got to have the faith to speak. For me, that's a big challenge, just to speak, to be friendly, and you never know what response you're going to get. Because you're certainly not going to get anything if you don't speak. You're certainly nothing's going to happen if you're not friendly. If you're unfriendly with people, you're being selfish. And that's the challenge I had to take on the chin. You know, I wasn't being unfriendly, but I was not being friendly. I was being selfish. I was thinking more about myself than caring about the people around me. So that's the first challenge, I think, from this conversation is speak, be friendly. You know, maybe the person not at all interested. That's fine. Just get in the habit of being friendly. A habit of having conversations around where you go. Now, it may be that you're naturally like that. Some people are, okay. I'm not, but some people are like that, and you've probably got a job in sales, and you're very good at it. But yeah, some people are naturally very good. Okay, well, I have a challenge for you as well. Don't let you off the hook. I continue. Verse 10. Jesus said to her, "If you knew the gift God if you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." "Sir," the woman said, "you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us this well and drank from it himself, as did his sons and his flocks and his herds?" And Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks the water I gave him will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life." And the woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I won't be thirsty and have to come into the well to draw water." He told her, "Go, call your husband and come back." "I have no husband," she replied. Jesus said to her, "You are right when you have no husband, you say you have no husband. The fact is, you have 5 husbands, and the man you now have is not your husband. What you have said is quite true." "Sir," the woman said, "I can see that you are a prophet, and our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you Jews claim the place where you must worship is in Jerusalem."
And Jesus declared, "Believe me, woman, a time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know. For salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming from now, yet a time is coming and has now come when the true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For they are the kind of worshippers the Father seeks. God is spirit, and his worshippers must worship in spirit and truth." The woman said, "I know the Messiah called the Christ is coming. When he comes, he will explain everything to us." Then Jesus declared, "I who speak to you am he." One of the striking things about this passage is right at the end, where he says who he is. And the interesting thing, in the previous chapter, he had a long conversation with Nicodemus, not as long, but he never really told Nicodemus who he was. Interesting. And there's various reasons why you could conjecture why that is, but we won't go into that today. But looking at the flow of the conversation, is that he sort of speaks in allegories at first about the living water, and the woman is sort of struggling to get it, and then he goes in and starts talking about her life, and this is the bit I sort of lose that a little bit, because I think, well, okay, Jesus, through his prophetic ability, knew what was happening in the woman's life. Now, if I'm running this parallel, or I'm trying to have this sort of conversation on a train, I'm not going to know that. So he's lost me a bit here. But I think we can be insightful, and we can pray for wisdom. And we shouldn't guess, you know. By the way, I think this, you might upset people that way. But you can be insightful. I mean, I think as Christians, and the more we get involved in each other's life, we actually understand people very well. And the more we read the Bible, because God understands people because he made them. So the more we get closer to God, we get closer to each other, and the more we reach out, we actually become fairly good at understanding people and what they really mean and why they say and what they really mean behind what they say. Yes, we can use that insight. But the challenge is here, I think, is in these conversations, you might be a very friendly person. And I know a few people like that who naturally are just very friendly. I know a lot of non-Christians like that. They're just very friendly. A lot friendlier than me, and I feel challenged by that. But that in itself is good, but it's not gonna take you very far. Because really, the next step is to be, and I've called the point here, I've come some weird names to these points, but this one is comfortable being uncomfortable. And you can make up a better point in your notes if you make your notes. But it's just this idea about having challenging conversations. It's about saying the uncomfortable things. Because, and I've done this in the past, I've had to work on being friendly, and then I can end up being so friendly with people that I never really hit the issues. That I have to talk around it, I like to be like Mr. Nice Guy, and I don't want them not to like me, and so I don't want to say anything too challenging. Well, Jesus got right to the root of it here. He went straight in there and started talking about the woman's life. And often when we have conversations with people, it's easy to get into religious conversations, isn't it? Plus, it's not easy, but sometimes it can be easy. And you start talking about religious theories and which are all great, but they actually don't have a lot of practical, application on people's individual daily lives. And also, it's not very challenging because you're speaking about something out here. When you actually start asking people about their lives and what's going on, and you can have people with some really sort of great sort of religious theories that they want to share with you. We say, well, actually, okay, great, but how are you doing? What's really going on in your life? And I had to work on this fair bit of the last year or so. And from being sort of friendly, Mr. Nice Guy, then I had to work on being more direct. And you're doing well on that when people get irritated because you're too direct all the time. And I had a bit of that recently. I noticed in the last few months, people were saying, well, actually, I have a conversation, and like almost the first thing I say, well, what's going on here? What happened at that time? And where were you the other day? And it would be, there'd be none of the sort of build up of the building of the relationship. I was going too far the other way, and I was being too direct. Yeah. But the fact is, you have to be direct. You have to get to the uncomfortable issues if you're going to have an impact on people's lives. You have to step through. You've got to be friendly to start with, or they won't talk to you anyway, and they won't listen to what you've got to say unless you're friendly. But you've got to hit the real issues. Be prepared to talk about sin. You know, and that's something that I've shied away a lot from in the past, especially when I've been reaching out. And, you know, I was thinking about how I might work, and I thought, okay, you know, I can get into friendly conversations, you know, start initiating them, but I'm afraid to really share about my life and what I really do and what I really think. And I think, why is that? Yeah, it takes faith to really believe, I think, that what we have is what people need. And I thought, that's really what's going on in my heart. If I really believed that I have the answer to people's problems, that I have the answer to their lives, I'd be sharing it. And it's not an intellectual thing at all. It's a faith thing. You know, it's having the faith to believe that what's in these scriptures can actually change people's lives for the better. And it's difficult when you're around people who seem to be so together. Have you ever had that? Yeah, their lives are more together than mine, you know. What am I to start preaching the Bible? And I've fallen into that trap in the past. And be worried about, you know, if I share too much about my own issues. And they'll think, well, you know, when you get the Bible out, well, I don't need that. My life's better than yours, you know. And I get afraid of being like that. Jesus was not afraid to hit the issues. You know, he got straight in there. And he knew what he had, and he talked about the living water, was what the woman needed. You know, we have what people need. Everybody we come across in our day-to-day life needs to hear what's in the Bible, what we've been studying that morning, what we've been praying about. They need to hear it. Yet, do we believe that? You know, for me, that's one of my big challenges, and that's what I'm determined to overcome. I really feel like, you know, focusing on prayer for a month has helped me to focus on a lot of other issues in my life that are affecting my prayer life, because these things are all linked. You know, nobody can say, oh yeah, yeah, my prayer life's bad and I'm not really reading my Bible, but I've got a lot of faith. You know, faith's one of those funny things, you never know how much you got until it's tested, and then it's a bit late. So, you know, these things are all linked. We can't be living the life without the faith. We can't have the faith unless we're studying the Word and praying. And I find this very much in my prayer life is very much dependent on my Bible study. I can be disciplined in my prayer life, but unless I'm reading the Bible, I don't know who I'm praying to. Well, I do. I know his name, but I start to forget about what he's like, and that affects my prayers. You know, sometimes in order to have good Bible study, I've got to be praying about what I'm studying, or I don't understand it. So the two are very much linked. And then, of course, my life is not backed up in the way I'm living, then that affects my prayer as well, and I feel guilty, and I feel like a hypocrite, and all these things are all linked and got to work together. Right, well, we'll skip on down a little bit. Actually, we'll read the next bit. Verse 27. Just then his disciples returned, and were surprised to find him talking with a woman, and no one asked, what do you want, or why are you talking with her? Then leaving her water jar, the woman went back to the town and said to the people, come see a man who's told me everything I ever did. And could this be the Christ? They came out of the town and made their way towards him. And then there's this conversation he has with the disciples where they you know, he says, you know, they say they bring the food. And then the funny thing is that the disciples went into town, you know, they went and did their job and they came back out again. I wonder if they spoke to anybody. I wonder if they reached out. Doesn't say it here. But then, you know, this woman sends, you know, goes into the town, and all the townspeople are coming out. And then they have the disciples having this conversation about food, which I won't read, but you're probably all aware of it. You know, where he says, "Oh, I have food you know nothing about," and they think, "Oh, has somebody fed him?" And he says, "Well, my food is to do the will of my Father." If we see, you know, our lives, you know, we don't like missing food, do we? Maybe like missing food, huh? They like miss a meal, maybe missed a meal today. I had to confess, I rushed out of the house with just a small bowl of sugar puffs inside me at the moment. I'm feeling my stomach is starting to rumble. when we picked up on the microphone, but I'll be hitting the biscuits later on. Stand aside. I hate missing meals. I actually don't eat a lot, but I tend to eat little and often. And, and fasting is quite a challenge for me. Well, it's a challenge for everybody, reasons why it's fasting, I guess. It feels like for me it's more of a challenge. And I don't like missing meals. I don't like missing food. And yet, I can miss a prayer time and, oh, I'll do it tomorrow. Or I can miss an opportunity in reaching out. Oh, so there's plenty of other opportunities. I think if we start to see it like food, which is Jesus' attitude, I think then we'll get far more balance in our lives. And we're far more urgent about things. Skipping down to the, and it says, verse 39. Many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. And he told them everything I ever did. So when the Samaritans came to him, they urged him to stay with them, and he stayed there 2 days. And because of his words, many more became believers. That's incredible. Out of one conversation, one impacting conversation, and you think, okay, if Jesus' plan was to evangelize this town, it probably, you wouldn't, you know, if you, well, certainly it was my plan, it wouldn't be sitting by a well outside the town. Wouldn't be my plan. And yet, I think he's showing the power of just being friendly and getting into conversations. Being direct with people and sharing a life. And, you know, throughout a whole town, you know, was reached out to. And he stayed there 2 days. They came out to see him. And yet the disciples went on en masse as a group into town. They bought their food and they came back out again. Which one are you like? I know too often I've been like the disciples. I've got to do something, I go and do it, I come back out. Do I speak to anybody? Maybe not. Oh, I'll go. A special time of evangelism then. I go in and I just talk to people and I come back out again. I think Jesus wants us just to, as we go, is use the conversations that we have. Be friendly with people. Get into their lives. Say the difficult things. And look at the impact. And even in that short time, that trip up, then 24 peaks, just a lot of that, just through natural conversation. And then people overhearing conversations. Nobody became a Christian yet. But I believe if we live like that, people become Christians. You know, when we see the impact. And I've seen that in my life in the past. That's why, you know, I'm desperate to get back into. And I feel it's starting to change. I feel my heart is changing. I'm starting to reach out more at work. And I'm, you know, starting to have conversations with people and care about people. When I see somebody, I'm starting to think, okay, they look grumpy today. Now, in the past, my sinful nature, somebody looks grumpy, I avoid them. All right, ever heard that? All right, there, or my boss is grumpy. I'll stay out of the way. Or maybe I've done something wrong. I start feeling guilty. Now, I wonder why. And I asked them, hey, you had a good day, and they find out they had a bad weekend. I was sitting opposite, I felt so bad, I was sitting opposite a guy who irritated me a little bit at work. Right, you ever had that? The guy irritates you? Maybe it's just me. He was a nice enough guy, but he kept talking to me when I didn't want to be talked to. and he talked a lot. And he was really quiet one Monday, and I thought, oh, phew. It's not till later on the day I overheard him having a conversation with somebody, and one of his best friends had died that weekend. And a guy who was about his age, married with 3 kids, and I think he just got a heart attack or something, just all of a sudden. I just thought, and then I heard, you know, another guy at work comforting him and having a conversation, and I thought, that should have been me. I felt really bad. And that sort of was a bit of an epiphany tonight. I just thought, what have I become that I just, you know, I'm just happy the guy's not talking to me. That's horrible. So now I get your mindset. I just look for people who, you know, how are you? Did you have a good weekend? And it's amazing how people respond. All right. And then through that, that's how a Christian is, I believe. And, you know, for me, it doesn't, you know, I have to pray about it to get there. But next thing is having those more challenging conversations. Bringing them along to church. Yeah, we'll get there. I just like to finish off in Colossians. One of my favorite passages, which covers the same subject, but it sort of sums it up very, very neatly. Um, We start in verse 2, chapter 4, Colossians, verse 2 down to verse 6. Devote yourselves to prayer, being watchful and thankful. That fits in with my prayer theme this month. And pray for us too, that God may open a door for our message, so we may proclaim the mystery of Christ, for which I am in chains. Pray that I may proclaim it clearly, as I should. Be wise in the way you act towards outsiders, and make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversation always be full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everybody. And to me, that sums up the whole of what Jesus was doing. Yeah, he made the most. He was wise in the way he acted towards people. He was wise with the Samaritan woman. He knew what the issues were. Him talking to a Samaritan woman, he knew the impact it would have. His conversation was full of grace. He was very polite. The fact that he even talked to her was incredibly polite. And yet he was seasoned with salt. He had a challenge in there. He had an impact on her life. And he knew how to answer everybody. Yeah, the interesting thing, it seemed like a distraction. You know, he starts talking about her life, and then she says, oh, but you guys worship in Jerusalem, and we worship on this mountain. Sometimes, you know, people like throw in a distraction. But he answered that. It was an actual real big issue for the Samaritans of where they worshipped. He answered that. And he said, yeah, okay, I understand that. But in the future, it's actually not going to be material at all where you worship, because, you know, you worship in spirit. Do we have an answer for people's questions and their issues about the Bible or whatever? I recently did a presentation to the teens in the north, in the Riverside sector and the Surrey sector. All the teens got together. I did a thing on the Bible and its trustworthiness, which for me is a big thing when I became a Christian. Prepared to give an answer. Yeah, it's a conversation. Be friendly, full of grace, seasoned with salt, and prepared to give an answer. That's things I wanted to share today. For me, it's a personal journey I just wanted to share with you. I hope that it's had some resonance in your lives. Let's go out there. Let's be friendly with everyone we meet. And let's start conversations. And let's be prepared to have the difficult conversations. And when they ask us the difficult questions, let's give an answer. Or if we don't know the answer, let's go and learn the answers. Thank you for listening.